All right, let's roll. Good morning. Thank you very much to our sponsors, Eli and Faggy Benstein. So far in absentia, but we'll see. Okay, the topic this morning is one that turned out to be a bit more broad than I had initially intended, so we're not going to get to cover all the material that's here on the actual pages here. As always, and I'm not offended if these get turned in, but I'm also not offended, would encourage, if you take them with you, you know, you never know when you're kind of bored and wandering around the house and you read through some of the sources or whatever. It's interesting stuff. So, you have too much paper. Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, but at any rate, we will probably not cover all these sources, but we're also going to be skipping around a little bit. The topic this morning is spiritual sanitation, hand washing in Jewish law, thought, and history. When I say history, I don't mean to say that we'll sort of trace the impact of ritual hand washing throughout the ages, but it is important to be aware of a specific historical context in which at least one mode of hand washing really originates. Yeah.
When you say hand washing, are you talking about this here, or was it soap and water and whatever else?
Ritual hand washing, okay. Not soap and water. Okay. Not soap and water, but you know, but that does play a role, as we'll see. Okay, I compiled these sources, and then in thinking through the best way to lay this out, I've actually decided to go in something of a different direction. Okay, so what I'd actually like to do is if we can skip to the second part first. Okay, Roman numeral 2, and I apologize there aren't page numbers on the bottom. I usually make a point of doing it. I don't know if everybody has, but we have extra source sheets up here. Okay, so where we have other items, we really find that hand washing rears its head in a number of different contexts throughout Judaism, throughout the Jewish halachic day, or times of day, we'll say, as a preface to certain activities, and also in response to certain activities. So I actually want to jump to other items, okay? Here we find that the Shulchan Aruch, okay, so this is Rav Yosef Karo's great work. This is basically the go-to for practical law in the here and now. And he gives a list of a number of items that we're probably less familiar with in terms of items that would then require hand washing. Do you have a question, Mark?
No.
Oh, you're just... Okay, no, fine. No. Keep your hands to yourself, man. Okay, so here we go. Take a look at this this first source under the umbrella of the second Roman numeral here, other items. Okay, and here the Shulchan Aruch explains, this is from Orach Chaim, Laws of Daily Living. This is section 18, subsection 18, actually, both. I'm sorry, this is section 4, subsection 18, okay? Here we go. So these are the ones who require hand washing. One who arises from his bed, that's important, okay? Kind of underline that in your mind for a minute. So one who gets up in the morning requires hand washing. That's an important item. And you may have to take my word for it a bit at this point, but what the Shulchan Aruch means here is that the actual activity of sleep itself necessitates hand washing when one arises, okay, when one gets up from that slumber. So that's number one. Then there are all kinds of others. One who leaves the bathroom or bathhouse, by the way, not referring specifically to one who takes care of his or her needs in the bathroom, but just being there, just being in the bathroom bears a certain sort of almost impurity or mild form of spiritual impurity. It's an unclean place, and we'll see as we continue to go that there is a, especially in these laws, as is true in many other laws as well, but there's a very strong correlation between physical impurity and spiritual impurity. Some items that don't seem to have anything to do with physical impurity nevertheless bear spiritual impurity, so we'll have to wash our hands. But even just the notion of hand washing, Marv, I think your question at the outset was interesting, that we speak about hand washing, and we immediately think of, oh, because your hands are dirty, right, soap and water. So the idea that hand washing with water becomes any sort of means of spiritual sanitation or spiritual elevation from whatever status we had previously, sort of an interesting thing. And it speaks of that ongoing correlation that we find everywhere throughout halacha, that there is that the physical and the spiritual often often go hand in hand with one another and often parallel one another.
I can understand how the physical goes hand in hand with the spiritual. How does the spiritual go hand in hand with the physical? I mean,
they're connected in the sense that we often find that items that certain things express themselves in a physical realm and then are copied in the spiritual realm as well, right? There isn't this great divide between the two. We find that they often go hand in hand, okay? So this is an example in the sense that we speak about a spiritual elevation by means of washing our hands with water. We get how that gets rid of bacteria, dirt, whatever, but the idea that that also should become some sort of preparation for the spiritual is really an unusual... It would be unusual if not for the fact that we are accustomed to thinking along these lines throughout Judaism. Okay? So here are a number of items. Okay, again, one who rises from bed, one who leaves a bathroom or bathhouse, cuts his nails, takes off his shoes, touches his legs, one who scratches his head. Okay, some say that also one who walks amongst the dead, one who touches a corpse, one who cleans his clothes, one who has marital relations, one who touches a louse, and one who touches his body with his hand. The what?
A literal louse,
not a figurative louse. Yeah. If you touch a figurative louse, there's no form of purity. There's no form of purification.
Is there a correlation between marital relations and mice?
That depends. And I will leave it there. That is for you to decide about your... There's no rhyme or reason why any of these should go together, right? There is,
just running a list.
You know, is I mean,
shouldn't be in the same sentence.
Well, you could ask then, what about cleaning your clothes? I mean, is it really just another chore? Like just another? I mean, is it really just housekeeping? Right. The idea is that there are, and by the way, marital relations is one that is a bit more confusing. The rest we could sort of on our own almost drop under one of two categories. That either I require hand washing because my hands are physically impure and it is improper to go about the rest of my halachic day making brachos, reciting the Shema, davening, etc. while I have hands that are physically dirty. It's just inappropriate. I wouldn't go to shake the president's hand if my hands were actually dirty, if they were physically filthy. I wouldn't get up in front of a room without, you know, washing my hands if I have gunk on them, so I don't go before God when my hands are physically impure, my hands are physically dirty. That's one category. The other category we can think of is, it just resonates as being more of a spiritual impurity. The idea of touching a deceased body or walking amongst the dead, it means going through a cemetery. There is some level, we understand, right, throughout the laws of spiritual purity and impurity, that for some reason or another, there is this association between death and spiritual impurity. Marital relations, I don't know.
It just seems wrong to me when it's supposed to be a bracha. Not a bracha, but a mitzvah. You know, and then
So is Chevar Kedisha. Chevar Kedisha is also
but
a mitzvah.
That's touching a dead body. That's you putting something... I just can't put my head around why... I understand.
So there's...
But it just seems that should be a separate bracha.
It's not a bracha. We're not speaking about a bracha. There's no bracha made here. It's just a matter of one of two things. In which category this particular activity falls under, I'm not sure. One is that physically your hands become schmutzig, for lack of a better term, or that there is some sort of...
But it's implying that it's messy or somehow dirty. That's what I'm kind of going.
I could understand how that, you know, doesn't sit well. Yeah. Suffice it to say that absolutely we don't view it as being messy or dirty or anything of the sort.
In the spiritual sense. In the physical sense, that it falls in
or
the
maybe
same
both. And maybe okay. That there is, you know, that there is. I'm not sure. I'm going to leave that alone for now.
I know. It's just
no fair. No, it's a fair reaction based on what we know about the Jewish perspective on marital relations. Yes, 100%. Fair enough. Okay, so. The reason why I bring this up, and again, we won't really be able to get deeply into everything, but one item that I'd like to draw your attention to is really the first item, that we say, one who arises from his bed. By the way, the only reason why it says his bed and all the pronouns are his is just because that's the way that that Hebrew functions, right? If you're picking a, a unisex pronoun, I'm sure that's not the right term, but you're speaking, if you're utilizing a pronoun that should apply to either man or woman, you automatically end up with a male, okay? And it's true for pluralizing also. If you speak about a whole group of people, some of which are men, some of which are women, so then the male pronoun is used. That's true of, only other language I've ever studied is Spanish. It's true of Spanish also.
And French.
There you go. Okay, thank you. Okay, so note that this applies equally to men and women. So one who arises from bed. All right, so now there is some sort of spiritual, we would think, impurity when it comes to the notion of arising from bed. And if you take a look at the very next source, okay, the Mishnah Brura. So the Mishnah Brura is this classic commentary written in the, I think, the late 19th century, because the author, Rav Yisrael Meir Kagan, died in the early 1900s. It may have only been completed, actually, in the 20th century. I'm not certain. At any rate, he writes, he explains the reason for this, and he says this is to remove the ruach ra'a. Ruach ra'a literally means evil spirit or bad spirit. Okay, this is some level of spiritual impurity. Don't know that much about it.
Isn't a ruach an odor also?
A reach is an odor, but definitely connected. The notion of spirit, right? Something that is perceptible, but that can be perceived, but can't actually be touched, isn't tangible. Right, definitely related. Reach is an odor or a smell, and a ruach is a spirit. So it's in order to remove the ruach ra'a that rests upon him by means of these activities. Therefore, he should wash immediately. So this applies to some of that list, not all of that list. But at any rate, we say that the proper washing is up to the wrist, at the very least until the knuckles. And the way that we do it in order to remove the ruach ra'a is we do three times in alternating fashion. One on the right, one on the left. One on the right, one on the left, one on the right, one on the left. Why that is the case, I don't know. There's whenever we start delving into these items like Ruach Ra and spirits and things like that, this obviously is more mystical and Kabbalistic in nature. But there is some sort of association between waking up in the morning and having had some sort of contact with spiritual impurity. Why would that be? Any thoughts? Yeah.
Because sleep is associated as similar to a death experience.
So we understand, exactly, so we understand how this would go hand in hand with some of the other items on the list, specifically walking through a cemetery, having direct contact with a dead body, right? Either if you are a physician, coroner, or a member of the Chevra Kedisha, that might require hand washing, because the notion is that there is some level of spiritual impurity that is associated with death. The notion of life, and again, this is mystical. I don't want to delve too deeply because I'm not sure that anything that I'm saying is true. But at least on the layman's level of Kabbalah and mysticism, what is happening here is that, and this is true, that there is always an association between potential for life that then turns into death and spiritual impurity. Okay, the notion of spirituality exists in a vibrant, active lifestyle. Death, being sedentary, all of those sorts of things are non-spiritual, because you stagnate, you don't grow, you don't move. Think also about the notion of the spiritual impurity that relates to a woman's menstrual cycle. Okay? Why? Because there's the potential for life, and then the potential for life isn't utilized. That's not to say that we ought to utilize it. I don't want to get into this whole topic here, but that's not to say that that at every moment or every cycle that we are necessarily mandated to do all we can to make sure that that becomes a life. That becomes a much more complicated topic. But the notion is that there was potential for life, and then that potential wasn't realized, wasn't actualized. So that bears some sort of spiritual impurity. Okay? It's not a bad thing. It's a concept. The same way that it's not a bad thing to come into contact with a dead body, right? Chevra Kedisha is one of the greatest mitzvot that we can do. The idea of caring for one who can never repay the favor, and the dignity of the deceased is being handled properly and appropriately, it's one of the greatest mitzvot that we can possibly do. But there is some sort of spiritual impurity that's associated with it. It's not something that we hide from, it's just something that we're cognizant of. That's the important thing to remember. Yeah?
So what moves you from washing hands to a mikvah?
The easy answer is the Torah's mandate, right? The idea that the idea of just washing hands apparently doesn't suffice when it comes to something that involves. I don't really know if this is true, and this is always the issue that we enter into whenever we deal with either mysticism or the definition of mitzvah, right? The easy answer is that the Torah says it's got to be a mikvah, so that's that. I could understand that there is a clear distinction between the impure source being external and then coming into physical contact with that versus when it comes to menstruation, the source of impurity is within a woman's own womb. And I'm so reluctant to use these terms because it's not, I don't want to, you know, cast aspersions on the monthly biological clock of a woman. But there is this association between, again, potential for life and spiritual impurity. It's not a great word, but it's this status. There's something that we're meant to recognize about potential for life, and then it doesn't become actualized. When that takes place within the person's own body, I can understand, perhaps, that complete immersion in a mikvah perhaps would be necessary, versus saying that the death is an external factor. It's a corpse lying on the table, and then I touch that, and that is really relegated more to my hands or extremities. By the way, when it comes to the times of the temple, etc., we would be more careful, right? There would be a much greater process, even in terms of coming into contact with a dead body, that even a mikvah won't help. Right, there were all kinds of reasons why men, especially Kohanim, would need to actually immerse themselves in a mikvah. Obviously, no internal process is happening within their bodies, but there would be all kinds of reasons why men, Kohanim especially, would need to go to the mikvah. Other men also, should they ever want to go to the Temple Mount, which they would have to, and coming into contact with a dead body can only become purified through the ashes of the red heifer. So it was a process that even mikvah wouldn't clear up and wouldn't rectify. We're not as accustomed to that anymore. Yeah?
The men's room has a hand-washing cup on the sink there. I've seen men use the facility, then do this here, and then grab some paper towels, wipe their hands, and take off. How does that work?
So I'll tell you, I have a rule, which is that whatever happens in the bathroom stays in the bathroom.
Gotcha.
That is one of the areas of the synagogue that I'm not willing to police. But I appreciate your bringing that to my attention. Maybe I'll start hovering around people as they enter into the bathroom. No, so it gets a little bit more complicated than that. Whether or not you actually need a washing cup when you come out of the bathroom is not so clear. It's not so clear. The notion of the washing cup comes up with these items that are related to Ruach Ra'a. Whether or not you experience that Ruach Ra'a as a means of going to the bathroom and even going to the bathroom, not just entering inside, but taking care of business, whether or not that applies is not so simple, not so clear. But I want to try to veer away from that. Yeah, Elise.
Quick question. I know there's certain times when you wash and you don't say blessings, and there are certain times when you wash and you do say a blessing.
Right.
I know there's sometimes the whole ritual you're supposed to pick up with your right hand, fill it with the right, and pass it. It's not just washing your hands. When are the times that you have to do alternating, and when are the times that you do three on one side and three on the other?
Okay, great. So, the notion of washing three times alternating applies certainly to the idea of waking up in the morning. Okay, and it applies to those items that bear Ruach Ra'a. Okay?
That's alternating.
Right.
Okay.
Why that works, why it's three, why it's alternating, I don't know. That's like mysticism. I don't get it. But that's what's done. So this notion of coming into contact with some sort of death kind of experience, which we say even sleep is some kind of an echo of. Okay, the Talmud speaks about sleep as being 1/60th of death. It gives all these 1/60ths. Shabbos is 1/60th of the world to come. Okay. Sleep is 1/60th of death. Okay, so the idea of having that sort of experience then carries with it this ruach ra'a. That's when we need the three times alternating. This entire list that we've just seen from the Shulchan Aruch is a mixture. Some of these are for the purposes of It's a combination of hygiene and just when your hands are dirty, again, it's inappropriate to go about your day. I'm going to make a blessing while making a blessing on a cup of coffee is a conversation with God. So just think about that for a second. Would you have, even though it's very, very brief, would you so much as have any sort of interaction with somebody you were trying to impress while your hands are dirty? You'd make
also
sure you clean up.
Also, the people didn't have facilities to wash on a daily basis or whatever, and didn't always think about it. I assume having prescriptions to do it required
to a great extent.
Clean.
Sure.
Also, in the ancient world, they didn't have soap.
Right. Certainly not.
The barbarians had soap.
Lye or no?
No, it wasn't until like 400 AD that most people had soap.
Really?
The barbarians had soap.
Fascinating.
But the Romans did not. Huh. Washing with water, you need to do it multiple times if there's no soap.
Right. Oh, interesting.
There's a practical issue.
Okay. But it doesn't apply. Well, no, what's interesting is that doesn't apply. Those items that would be physically dirty, that does not apply to. The notion of three and the multiple times does not apply to items that are physically dirty. It applies to the notion of, let's say, waking up in the morning.
So which do you do, three on one side and then three on the other?
Alternating. One.
There are other times when you do three on one side and three on the other, correct?
Not three, two. Well, it depends. It depends. We'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there, okay? The notion of...
Yeah.
No, that's fine.
Why we do it one way.
None of these... So that all pertains to Ruach Ra. It's a Kabbalistic thing. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly, okay? That's the three. The three alternating, all right? This entire list that the Shulchan Aruch just presented us with is brachaless. You don't make a bracha. There is no blessing that's made on this because there's no formalized kind of mitzvah. It's just that you're not clean, whether it is physically not clean or spiritually not clean. But there's no enactment of a real halacha here such that you would really be able even to make a bracha. That's even when you wake up in the morning, and then we'll have to respond to that in a minute. Okay, that's why I started here. We know that we make a bracha. It's right in the siddur, right? You wake up in the morning, al natil al sidayim. So I have to get to that. So what will become important to realize is that that blessing is not recited because we washed our hands, because we slept, because we had this brush with death. It's for other reasons that overlap, and we'll start to see that there are these overlapping sorts of concerns that we may have. Some will necessitate a bracha, won't necessitate a bracha. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then
already
we'll... Keep, okay. No, it's okay, and then we'll go to Dan.
Quick. So do you do moda'ani before you wash your hands or after?
Partially before, partially after. For some of the specifics, you'll have to just ask
okay.
me afterwards.
No, I'm just curious because...
It's all fair and valid, yeah. Ideally, right, exactly. Yeah.
Does it matter whether you get the left hand first or the right hand first?
Should be the right hand first. Try to do the left hand?
They want you to do three in one hand, three in the other. So
that's for bread. That's
not,
for...
They'll make it. I'm just... Some other place. They try to force me. That's okay.
After a cemetery or... Oh, that's... Okay, I don't know.
Well, tell us why.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll get there. We're not there yet. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but we'll get there. We'll get there. Okay, the only thing that, for clarity and focus, the only thing that we've really discussed is this idea. And try to clear everything else out of your mind, because this gets so broad and so far-reaching, and the tentacles keep, getting ever further, okay? So what we know now is that if you wake up in the morning... Or you wake up, it seems like, at any point, right? The notion of sleep necessitates hand washing, okay? No blessing for washing just because you slept. The same way that there's no blessing when you contact a dead body. The same way that there's no blessing if you walk through a cemetery. The same way that there's no blessing if you're handling lice or cleaning out, schmutzy kinds of vessels and dishes and things like that, okay? No blessing, whether it's a reaction to some spiritual impurity or physical impurity, you wash because it's not appropriate to continue your day without making sure that your hands are clean and you sort of wipe the slate clean. Okay, but no blessing. But we know that we do make a blessing in the morning when we wash our hands. We know that it's in the siddur. You open up to the first page of blessings in the morning. One of the blessings is Al Natilas Yadayim. So why do we make it? So now I want to turn back, and this is why I started with two, to kind of get that section out of the way. And now, on top of that, superimposed on this notion of washing because it's motivated by waking up from sleep. Now I want to get into this, washing in the morning, okay? So this is, again, the Shulchan Aruch had a slightly earlier point. He says that one who wakes up in the morning, he should wash his hands and then recite the blessing on the washing of the hands. Okay, so you do recite a blessing when you wash your hands in the morning. Now, the Mishnah Berurah explains what's happening here. He says, and go to the second paragraph, and this does get complicated. Okay, I thought you were confused until now. Now it gets confusing. Check this out. He says there are two reasons for this. Two reasons why I would recite a blessing. Two reasons why. What does it mean if you're reciting a blessing? It means that you've done some sort of formal mitzvah, some sort of formal halacha. Not just that I've reacted to, I got to keep clean, right? Something that I did that requires some sort of reaction to rectify that situation, but I've performed some sort of even rabbinic enactment. That's when we require an actual blessing. If I light candles in my house in order to see, I don't make a blessing. If I light Hanukkah candles, that is an actual enactment from the rabbis that it's something that I have to do. What if I light Shabbos candles? The reason why we light Shabbos candles, by the way, may just be in order to be able to see. But that's a specific recipe that is enacted by the rabbis. So when I do that, I recite a blessing. But if it's a Tuesday night, then I don't have an enactment or a specific formalized mitzvah or law. So there's no blessing. Okay. So why do I make the blessing here? What is the actual enactment here? What's going on? What's the Shulchan Aruch talking about? Mishnah Berurah explains. Two reasons for this. The Rush, this is Rabbeinu Asher. These are both scholars from the Talmudic scholars from the medieval period. The Rush wrote that it is because one's hands are active and it is impossible for them to have not touched some unclean part of the body at night. Okay? You roll around, you touch, I don't want to be graphic, you touch your armpit, okay, in the middle of the night. You pick your nose in the middle of the night. Okay? You're scratching at your ear in the middle of the night. Or other areas, dot, dot, dot. So, because we can't assume that our hands are just totally stationary throughout the course of the night, we believe that they probably have touched some physically unclean part of the body. Even just scratching your hair, scratching your scalp. Some part of the body that we consider to be likely unclean. This was especially true, by the way, before the notion of, you know, daily showering. Okay, but even today. So, the sages therefore established the blessing on the washing of the hands for the reading of the Shema and for the Amidah. You wake up in the morning, one of the first activities that you'll have to engage in is shacharis, is prayer. So, in this context, it's not like blessings throughout the day. It's not like I might have a cup of coffee. It's not like I might decide to sit down and recite a parak of Tehillim. It's not that I might sit down and have and do some Torah study where my hands ought to be clean. But here, we know that this is part of the order of the day. You get up in the morning, you're going to go daven shacharis now. So we formalize hand washing. Okay, we regulate hand washing. You must wash your hands in order to prepare for prayer, shacharis specifically. So even though it's just physical impurity, it's sweat, it's schmutz, it's dead skin, whatever it is that you've been, you know, scratching and rubbing throughout the night. So you then wash your hands. That cleanses you
physically,
and now you're clean in a physical sense, now you're ready to pray. It's inappropriate to go into your meeting with God if you have sweat on your hands. Or
so
if you have...
Did you wash before Moda Ani? One
second.
To...
Moda Ani, you recite the first portion of Moda Ani the second your eyes open. Okay? And then you proceed. Right?
Then you've not really washed them before you say your prayers.
Before Moda Ani. Before Moda Ani. Right. Well, when we speak about prayers in general, by the way, even more than that, whenever the Talmud uses the term prayer, it refers to Shemona Esrei. Tefillah, throughout the Talmud, always refers to the Amidah, specifically. Okay, so shacharis.
So Moda Ani is considered a bracha, not...
Not a bracha. I mean, it's not a bracha. We're not saying baruch.
What is it then?
It's a prayer, but it's not prayer. It's a prayer, but it's not prayer.
Okay.
I'm glad I clarified that one.
It's a meal, it's not dinner.
It's right. It's food, but it's not. I'm eating, but I'm not eating. You know,
then
right.
You can do the kiddush and the...
So now, Rashba, okay, Rashba wrote that it is because in the morning, after having slept, we are like new beings. You wake up, you are a briah chadasha, you are a brand new being. This, by the way, sort of dovetails with that notion of if sleep is sort of like death, then I wake up in the morning, this is like, I'm a newborn. I'm a born again. Praise the Lord. We must give thanks to the Blessed One who created us to give Him honor, to serve Him, and to bless His name. Why did God give me life again? Like, every day, it's such a beautiful concept. Every day I have to reassess. So I'm alive. This is my first day of life. Why did God give me life?
To praise Him.
To have a relationship with Him. So if I'm going to do that, and it is there, and it is for this that they established that, blah, 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 to serve and bless His land, it is for this they established all the morning blessings, which we recite each morning. Each morning, I thank God that I can take another footstep. I thank God for, you know, straightening my back. I thank God for all sorts of different things, for opening my eyes, because each morning it's this brand new awareness that I never had previously. I am alive for the very first moment. I'm born. I'm born into the new world, into the new day, as a brand new being. Therefore, they established this blessing as well, to sanctify ourselves in His sanctity, and to wash our hands from a vessel like a Kohen, who would wash his hands from the laver prior to beginning his service. Really beautiful concept. The idea that each and every morning I need to stop, pause, reassess. I'm alive! I'm alive! Why am I alive? Why did God give me life? He gave me life in order to have a relationship with Him, in order to serve Him, to praise Him, to daven, to make blessings, etc. Not that God needs minions, but that it's important for us. We become elevated by doing so. So, if that's the case, what am I most comparable to? To a Kohen, right? A Kohen begins his service in the morning, realizing I have a whole day of service ahead of me. I have to, it's like rebirth. I have to repurify myself, re-sanctify myself to get the day going. That's what we're like. It is a brand new day of service. It's almost disconnected to whatever came previously, the previous day. I have to wash my hands in order to dedicate this brand new section of life, these brand new hours that I'm going to have, dedicating myself to God, like a Kohen. So it's this rebirth, this notion of rebirth that apparently the Kohen is also meant to recognize that he experiences. It's a brand new day, fresh, and from the outset of, I hate to say it, but this is just a mashal, okay? Think of it as almost like a baptism, right? It's like horrible saying that, but the idea of a brand new being, so you have to, does it happen immediately at birth? Is that when baptism? I don't know. Anyone? No? Don't think it happens later. Gotcha. Okay. Well, at any rate, the idea is that it is sanctification from the outset. Brand new day, brand new being. It's true of the Kohen, but it's true of every one of us, each one of us.
But they all got the water thing from us.
Who? Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, they got a lot of things from us. Yeah, absolutely. But I just mean the notion, absolutely, yeah, sure. It comes from, the notion comes from mikvah. Absolutely. Okay, so the idea that you do something with water to sort of dedicate yourself. You wash your hands, you're clean, you start fresh. So it's something that applies, equally applicable both to a Kohen and also to every Jew. Each Jew needs to feel that this is a brand new day of service, disconnected to the one before. It's on its own merits. We need to zero in, we need to focus, and we wash our hands in order to cleanse ourselves. Okay? Two different reasons why we might wash our hands. Neither one deals with the idea of I'm impure from having slept. It's that I'm a brand new being, rededication, so I have to wash my hands. Or it's that I'm going to daven shacharis, certainly my hands are unclean because of, you know, all of this in the middle of the night, you know, whatever. So I need to wash my hands in order to make myself clean. That is part, it's almost part of shacharis, right? Part of shacharis is that you wash your hands, okay? Practically speaking, we get into a bit of a difficulty here, okay? And I'll just sort of lay this out quickly. Depending on which opinion you follow here, and we try to follow both, we get into a bit of an issue. According to Rashba, right, the idea is that I'm a brand new being. I'm a brand new being. I have to dedicate myself, sanctify myself to God as a brand new being. What do? I need to wash. When? Immediately. You have life again, brand new day, you got to wash right away. According to Rush, what's the point? Why do I make a blessing? What's the actual formal hand washing that we are required to do? It's a preparation for chakras. So think about this. I wake up in the morning, and yeah, my hands are likely, you know, unclean because I, you know, scratched and whatever. Okay, earwax and who knows what. Okay. Then I wash my hands. Then I get dressed. Then I put my shoes on.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah, now you're better.
Now I put my shoes on. My hands are dirty again. I got to wash again. Okay?
Right. Yeah.
So, what would the Rush tell you to do? Got to wash your hands again. The whole notion of hand washing is that your hands should be clean for chakras. Okay. Here's the issue. When do you recite a blessing on any mitzvah?
After you.
Just as you do it, whether it's right before, right after in some cases, but just as you do the mitzvah, right? Follow this. According to Rashba, I wake up in the morning, I wash my hands, I'm a brand new being. Nothing to do with cleanliness, right? It's a spiritual thing. I'm a brand new being. I'm dedicating myself to God by means of this water that I'm splashing on my hands. So that is the hand washing. That's what the rabbis were talking about. Make your blessing now. According to the Rush, if I make the blessing now, and then I put my shoes on, my hands are dirty, I haven't accomplished anything. I made the blessing on the wrong washing. Okay, that's the point. Practically speaking, what seems like the best way to go about doing this is that we wash at both instances, right? We wash as soon as we wake up in the morning. We wash again right before chakras. And then we recite the blessing there. You get into some halachic, I don't want to go into it, but you get into some halachic issues with that, right? Making the blessing so far removed from the first washing. But practically speaking, that seems to be the best way to go. It's one of the options that is laid out by the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef is a commentary that Rav Yosef Karo, author of the Shulchan Aruch, wrote on a previous work of halacha. Okay? That seems to be the best way to go. All that is the morning routine. So you have this overlap here. On one level, I need to wash because brush with death. On the other hand, that's not something that we would establish a blessing for. There's some sort of more formal, actual enactment that the rabbis were driving at when they said, wash your hands, recite a blessing. What is that? One of two things. Either I'm a brand new being and I dedicate myself to God, and that act of dedication to God via the hand washing necessitates a blessing. That is the formal enactment that the rabbis made. Or that it's part of chakras preparation. You wake up in the morning, you're going to daven. You can't daven without having clean hands. And we know your hands are dirty, because whether or not you know it, you pick your ears during the night. You also snore, by the way. We don't make any blessing on clearing that up. But there are all kinds of things that we might do in the middle of the night that we're not aware of, and scratching heads, and who knows what, scratching your back even. Parts of your body that are, generally speaking, parts of your body that are clothed, we assume probably, you know, you sweat a little bit, and it gets a little gross. So you clean your hands. That's for chakras. It's either chakras preparation, or I'm a brand new being, I dedicate myself to God. So you have kind of almost three overlapping reasons here, and it puts the blessing in an unusual kind of position. Elise, did you have a question?
Yes, I do. Just to backtrack a little bit on, because obviously, for some reason, when you were talking about things you do in the morning, after you wake up, before you put your shoes on, in between all that, I was thinking, changing a baby's diaper.
Right.
It's not on the list. So is this open to the ruach? Open to interpretation as far, because that's not on the list.
So what we're
so is it anything that's just unclean, or does it have to be something that, I mean, obviously changing a diaper is...
Yeah, I would think of these as paradigms, right? As
okay.
Right, basic likely examples that you're okay. Examples that you'll likely encounter throughout the day. By the way, consider the Shulchan Aruch, right, was written in the early 16th century, and it wasn't written for women. Okay, it was written, I mean, clearly, in the 16th century, the expectation was not that a woman would ever be opening up a Shulchan Aruch.
Or that a guy would change a diaper.
Exactly, that's the point, right? Exactly. Whatever you would be, whether it was a piece of cloth, I mean, I don't think, how old is the Pampers company? I don't think, No, it wasn't around in the 60s. Really? Pampers? What they, I can't even imagine.
60s-ish,
40s? 40, right, really?
Still, you know.
Wait, 1540s? No, okay. Yeah, 1540s. So, yes, consider it the notion of coming into contact with that sort of stuff, whether physically, spiritually, ruach, I don't know, at the very least, will say that it's kind of, you know, schmutzy, and you wash your hands. Danny?
So there's plenty of activities in your normal day. You mow the lawn, you're in the garage, whatever. You come in your house, you wash your hands.
Right.
That doesn't require a blessing.
Doesn't require a blessing. But it's it is important even in an halachic context, right? Meaning
wash with soap and water and then do three.
The notion of three is this idea of ruach ra'ah, spiritual kind of issue going on. It doesn't mean that you have I was working on the car. I have grease all over my.
That's a bad thing where you can't do too much. So
whoa. Sure, you can do too much.
I'm sorry.
You guys both lost me.
So coming back to the idea of
doing something during the day,
right? You want your hands to be clean.
You wash your hands.
Right. So we all want our hands to be clean, just because who wants to walk around with dirty hands? But
no blessing.
You just wash your hands. Right.
Now you're done.
Exactly. No need.
I was adding on to that.
Excuse me.
No need for the cup. No need for the cup. Just soap and water. Right.
You wash your hands, soap and water, you're done.
Right.
There's nothing to do with anything else that's following halachic law other than you're keeping your hands clean.
Except that keeping your hands clean, this is what I want to point out, okay. Keeping your hands clean is also is part of the halachic process that we're speaking about here. Because... not that there are halakhic guidelines for not having dirty hands just because it's gross, but because at some point you're going to do something that we consider to basically be an encounter with God. And you can't have dirty hands while you're doing that. Now you could say, well, even mowing the lawn is an encounter with God. Yeah, beautiful, spiritual, great. But more more direct, you're going to make a blessing at some point. Yeah, you're going to make a blessing at some point. You can't make a blessing with dirty hands. You're going to want to study Torah at some point. You can't study Torah with dirty hands because it's more of that direct kind of encounter. Elise and then Steve. Yeah.
But that goes back to what I was trying to add on to your... Okay.
Go on.
But that goes back to what I know is saying you go in to wash your hands with soap and water because that's what we just do as habit. But if you say, I just touched my nose. Now, I would go wash my hands with soap and water. No cup.
Okay. The idea of the cup is limited to this spiritual kind of thing, or thing.
Well, it says, okay, so that doesn't count. Then it says, one who touches, I touch my leg. It doesn't matter that I touched my leg, and that's on the list.
You wash your hands.
Soap and water is the same.
Yeah, you don't even use soap. Whatever you want to do. But the idea that there should be that they should be, you know, clean on some level, right? Yeah, Steve.
Mm-hmm. You probably don't know the answer to this. It was actually a point of pride of physicians till about 1900 to like have the dirtiest, most disgusting clothing they could have, blood covered, whatever. I'm just wondering, did Jewish physicians wash their hands between patients? Because doctors did not. Nurses did.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's just an interesting
question. Interesting. I mean, they would have for at least for other reasons, in theory.
Yeah, I'm just asking.
There's this ongoing issue that we don't want to have dirty hands because there's this. It's a weird kind of thing because it's true of a number of issues of halakha, right? We don't say we say that how can I have dirty hands? I'm standing before God. Well, I'm always standing before God, even while I'm working on my car. Does it mean that I can't work on my car because I'm going to have dirty hands? I can't work on my car because I'm a Jew. I mean, you know, I don't know how to work on cars, you know. Nordy can help me out, right? but there's nothing wrong with being involved in those activities that get your hands dirty, but the assumption is that shortly thereafter I'll have more of a direct encounter, and I want my hands to be clean for that purpose. So I don't know. I don't know about physicians. Would you clean in between just because we're kind of obsessed with always having clean hands. Yeah.
I'll be quiet after this because I'm not talking.
Ah, well, we'll see.
I really will. But But a lot of things that are in Jewish law turned out eventually to be make a lot of sense as far as cleanliness and lifestyle.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That had to, they said during the plague that Jewish homes had less plague. Of course, it's where, you know, they said all kinds of things. It's the Jews. But they basically backtracked that the fleas that were on the rats were coming around less in Jewish homes because we cleaned up after Passover and we didn't have the house cleaned out. And that was part of the ritual. And basically what I'm saying is that a lot of the rituals that we do make good common sense, of course, because God told us to do it. So that's why they make sense eventually in a more practical way later on.
I believe so very, very much. But look, it's not why we do it, and it's not that this really is the reason for it, but it's incidental. You know, it's this idea that if you're dealing with a divine, you know, super perfect intellect, there may be overlapping kinds of reasons for anything that we do. Sure, right, very possible. It's more than that also. By the way, you also have a mandate to bathe at least once a week, right, before Shabbos. You have a mandate to... Whether you're dirty or not. You're dirty. Bathe once a week. You also have a mandate to basically clean your home once a week, right? So all those kinds of, and hand washing. I mean, there absolutely were Jews who perished in the Black Plague, right?
But so it almost statistically less.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, Margie.
But you know how you talked to us in the past about talking to God, just whenever you see him, for me might be if you're driving. Someone pulls out, there's a near miss or something.
Right.
And you say, thank you, God.
Right.
But what if your hands are dirty? What if you've just been shopping?
So that's what I mean. There are, we almost expect that to be the status quo or the default setting for the Jew. That the Jew is always kind of talking to God in those kinds of ways. Think Tevye, right? So... But there are these more formalized contexts when we actually mention God's name, when we sit and study Torah, when we recite passages that contain his name from scriptures and things like that. And for those things, we say it's inappropriate that our hands be unclean. And to the extent that it depends, but those activities may even be curtailed and may need to be avoided until such time as we can clean our hands. Now, we do say that in a pinch, you don't necessarily need the water. Right, again, if it's just a matter of cleanliness, so you might be able to, you know, wipe your hands on a baby wipe or something like that. But even on a towel, get clean enough so that, you know, we don't want somebody walking around all day. Well, I can't study Torah because my hands are dirty. I can't find water or whatever. Also, to us, the idea of like, what do you mean you can't find water? Right, you go to the sink and you wash your hands. Stop being so lazy. Remember what it was to have water, and can you imagine? To have to, you know, go out to the, well, you have snow, I guess it's kind of easier. But it's not always so simple to just find water. I mean, halacha is replete with all these sorts of scenarios. How far out of my way do I have to walk if I'm traveling in order to wash my hands before I say that I'm allowed to daven? Right? Do I just daven and say, okay, Nunu, I have dirty hands, God'll, I hope understand. Or do I say, no, I have to make a specific point of traveling out of my way in order to wash it? What do you mean traveling out of your way? You stop into, like you pull into BP, and you buy a bag of chips and you wash your hands. It wasn't that simple. And if there wasn't snow on the ground and there wasn't a pond nearby, then you were out of luck.
How about a bottle of Purex?
Sure. For some things, not for this ruach ra'a notion. For some reason, that's tied to this idea of three. I don't know why exactly. Okay, last couple of minutes. I just want to show you something that we're more familiar with, Marv. This goes back to your question about shalosh shudas. So there is one time when we make a blessing of Al-Natilas Yadayim, which is just in the morning, for one of those two reasons that we saw. Either I'm a brand new being, I'm dedicating myself to God, that's a formal ritual washing upon which the rabbis enacted a blessing, or they enacted a blessing for part of my Shacharis preparation. Part of my preparation for prayer is that I wash my hands and then I'm going to have to recite a blessing. There's one other context, which we know is, when else do we recite a blessing on washing hands? Prior to eating bread, okay? Well, here we go. Jump to number 4. We're going to ditch section 3 for today. Section 4, eating bread, okay? Here, again, Shulchan Aruch, Kufnun Ches, section 158 in Aruch Chaim. Again, laws of daily living. When one is going to eat bread, upon which he would recite Hamotzi, He must wash his hands, even if he does not know that they have come in contact with anything tameh. Tumah, again, this notion, it's not ruach ra'a, it's different. It comes from different sources, but this idea of tumah, tumah versus tara, again, for lack of a better term, spiritual impurity and purity. Okay, so these were the sorts of things that we had to be very, very careful about, especially in the times of the temple, because we couldn't approach the temple, we couldn't so much as stand in the courtyard of the temple if we had contracted spiritual impurity, right, some sort of tumah by coming into contact with some sort of impure source. Easiest example, you touch a dead body, certainly. Okay, and then you need all kinds of rituals to get over that. Other things also, okay, that we would that we would say bear tumah. Even though I don't know that I'm tumah, nevertheless, I have to wash my hands, and then I recite the blessing upon the washing of the hands, al netilas yadayim. Yeah, Danny.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, fair enough. All right, fair enough. Fair enough. Chime in if you like. Mishnah Berurah now. Okay. By the way, the fact that the Shulchan Aruch says even if I don't know that my hands necessarily touched anything tameh, is though some sort of indication that that's kind of what we're dealing with. That's the framework. We're dealing with some sort of tumah tahara kind of scenario. Okay. Why would that be? Why do I need to make sure that my hands might not be tameh? Maybe they're tameh. I don't know if they're tameh. I got to make sure they're not. Be sure that they're not tameh. Even if I don't remember, why would that have anything to do with eating bread? So here's the Mishnah Berurah. Two reasons for the enactment of the hand washing. The first is due to contamination of teruma. Who eats teruma? Anyone know? The Kohanim. Okay, the Kohanim. The law of teruma is that when I have my crop, I share one fraction of it with the Kohanim. And when I give maaser, which is 10%, to the Leviim, the Leviim, even of their share, need to take off a portion and then give that as truma. Truma is special produce that's been set aside. I mean, it's no more special than the rest of the produce, other than it's been set aside for the purpose of the Kohanim. Only Kohanim may eat truma. And one second, you're not done yet. You need a red heifer. Hold on. And it may only be eaten in a state of purity. Okay, so a Kohen could become our presumption today is that all Kohanim, all Leviim, all Yisraelim, all of us are spiritually impure. Okay, because we must at some point have come in contact with a dead body, in all likelihood, even though Kohanim continue to try to keep that at bay. But nevertheless, there's that ongoing presumption that has happened at some point, and there's no way to rectify that. There's no way to become pure after that because it requires a red heifer, para aduma, all that stuff.
How close is contact?
It depends. Either
deer on the road, you don't touch it.
Maybe you don't. No.
Well, my cousins in West Virginia.
Shabbos dinner. The contact may mean, depends on what we're talking about. It may mean direct contact.
Right.
It may mean
that's the obvious.
It may mean standing in the airspace of. Okay. So it may mean if there was a dead body in the room, so that whole room or that whole building. This, by the way,
could be the whole building.
Could be the whole building.
Like many
yeah.
Many rooms in the building.
Yeah, it depends on how things are, you know, cordoned off and all that. But yeah, yeah. Okay, so.
Well, isn't that?
Yeah, Danny, was there something?
Well, yeah. I mean, let's say you were walking down the roadway, and in the ditch is a dead animal. I mean, is that contact?
If you're just walking down the road, no. But if there's something that creates a common airspace, like a tree, like some sort of shelter, like a bus stop, right? Like the deer was waiting for the right bus, it just never came, and he died.
You know. I'm out on the road a lot, riding my bicycle. And
right.
There's all kinds of things in the ditches, and they're not alive.
Right.
And you can smell them.
There's no issue with your coming into contact with those things. Right.
Just curious.
But yes, that would be, I mean, that would render something impure. But even if it's in the same airspace, yes, right?
If you walk into a hospital, there could be dead people in the hospital.
Sure, sure. There's a...
Was a whole hospital, considered?
Likely, right? Okay. So yeah, you do have to be careful. What? Yes, you have to be careful. Now, only Kohanim have a mandate to stay away from that Tuma. Okay? Others need not stay away from it, but it needs to be rectified afterwards should you, let's say, want to go to the temple. Now, we can't. I mean, there is no temple to go to right now, so it's sort of a non-issue for us. But
it's only when you go to eat.
But also only eating truma, so it's also a non-issue. Meaning, what happens to truma now is that it's not given to the Kohanim, obviously.
Poor
right?
Kohanim.
Yeah, poor Kohanim. Right? Only we're talking about a small, small fraction of the food.
But this clearly does not refer only to human bodies.
No, it refers to more than human bodies. Right? Human body has the highest level of contraction, but yeah. Okay, so here's the issue. The issue is that because of, and I don't want to get into all the ins and outs of Tumah and Tahara, we can't. I can't anyway. But suffice it to say that for lower levels of Tumah and Tahara, at least the hand washing would be necessary. So here's what he says. Since one's hands are active and touch all sorts of items, at the time during which Tumah and Tahara were observed, practically, when the Kohanim would eat their truma, they would need to wash their hands according to rabbinic law before they would eat truma, so that they would not make a tameh by touching it. There are certain things that a kohen might touch that would then make it tameh, that would then make his hands tameh. Okay, so if his hands are tameh, he can't eat truma. All right. Now, what does that have to do with us? We're not eating truma, and we're not kohanim, most of us. So what does that have to do with us? So this is, it's such a, I don't know, I think it's a beautiful concept. And in order to ensure that the Kohanim would be so accustomed, they decreed that each and every Jew may not eat bread until he washes his hands. The rest of us, depends on how you look at it, either the rest of us get thrown under the bus because the Kohanim need to remember, so he had to create a nationwide standard so that the Kohanim would remember to wash their hands before eating truma, their truma bread, let's say. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is that every Jew has social responsibility, spiritual social responsibility, towards his fellow Jew. Yes, it is incumbent upon me to ensure that the Kohen is able to eat his truma properly without contaminating it, without making it impure. That is an obligation that I have. The same way that I need to care about somebody who can't necessarily afford to make Shabbos or to make Pesach, I also have responsibility towards making sure that other people continue to maintain Jewish law.
Just as being a Jew?
I don't need to make sure that non-Jews keep Jewish law.
No. I mean, just because I'm a Jew, I have that responsibility.
Sure, I have a responsibility towards my brothers and sisters to make sure that they're, you know, that they stay sharp, okay? So in order to make sure that the Kohanim remember to wash their hands, I also wash my hands.
And do you do it the same way? One.
So this is different. This is 1-2, 1-2. It doesn't alternate. It's twice on the right hand, twice on the left hand. Okay? That's okay. Before bread, twice on the right, twice on the left.
Not three.
Not alternating. Twice on the right, twice on the left.
How about if you're left-handed?
This is a little bit more, we kind of wrap our heads around it. The idea is that you give one splash of water, that water then becomes tameh. This is all for tameh. This is how tameh actually works. Once that water is tameh, I give another splash and that rinses that off, and then I do it on the left hand.
No, assume you're right. What if you're left-handed? Can you reverse it like you do for Tumah?
I believe it's still... No, I don't think so. I think this is one of the few that maintains...
First on the right.
2-2.
For bread.
First on the right.
For bread. 2-2. First on the right, then on the left.
But you still do the thing where you pick up in your right, fill it with your right hand.
Fill it in the... Pass to the left, yes.
And then two on the right, exactly. Two on the left.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So now, so we get it. When the Kohanim are eating truma, so I do it in order to make sure that the Kohanim stay sharp. Guess what? Kohanim aren't eating truma anymore. So can't we abandon this now? And even today, when the Kohanim do not eat truma because of tuma, we're all tummy, there's no way to get out of it now. Simple hand washing doesn't suffice anymore. The decree was not nullified. Why? In order to ensure that the Jewish people would be accustomed to eating in a state of Tahara when the temple will be rebuilt, may it be so speedily in our lives. Okay, the other reason is because of general sanctification before we eat bread, but this is the first reason is what I want to focus on. It's a remarkable thing. We don't think about it. Probably didn't know it, but we certainly don't think about it. Every time we wash our hands, it's a statement of, we'd better stay sharp because the temple will be rebuilt. It's pretty powerful. It's that I better, and it's both. It's spiritual social responsibility. I'll do it so that the Kohanim stay sharp. When do the Kohanim need to stay sharp? For when the temple will be rebuilt. So it's a statement that it will, that we believe that it's going to happen, and not only that it's going to happen, but that we need to stay on top of our game. That we can't allow this whole corpus of law that applies only to an era in which the temple is actually erect to just fall by the wayside. We need to stay on top of it. Every single time we wash our hands, it's a commemoration, basically. It's not just a commemoration, like remember that wonderful relic of the past, the temple. I need to stay on top of my game. Reminds me of this this little building in the old city of Jerusalem that is it's sort of a museum put up by this institution called Machon HaMikdash, where they have begun to refashion all of the various tools that they'll need for the Beis HaMikdash. It's a fascinating place to go visit, but beyond that, that's really the mentality that we sort of have to be in, that it's practical. It's practical because we hope that will happen soon, and every single time we wash our hands, at least for bread, it's both of those messages. It's staying sharp for the sake of the time when the temple will be rebuilt, and also this notion of social responsibility on a spiritual level for halacha, that I need to do it so that the Kohanim will remember to do so as well. Yes?
Practical question. Mm-hmm. All right. So 90% of the time, we just need to wash our hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
If you're going to have bread, it's 2 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When is it 3 and 3?
So it's 3 and 3 alternating when we wake up in the morning.
That's it.
Yeah. That's the only, maybe for coming into contact with a dead body also, those sorts of things. Yeah, 3 and 3. Alternate. The idea of 3 and 3 comes from this notion of Ruach Ra, right? More pronounced so sense alternate. Of Ruach Ra. That's when it's alternating.
Okay.
But the idea of eating before, of eating bread, it's just a two on right hand, two on left hand, that's it.
Yeah. How about
and everything else?
They do 3 and 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Certainly for hand washing. Certainly for washing before bread, I didn't know about the other.
Yeah.
So on Yom Kippur morning, when I come to shul here, just before I left the house, I put my shoes on. So before I go in there, I go in the men's room and wash my hands.
That's right. Absolutely. Right.